Hi, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sophie.
Welcome to A TARDIS of One's Own,
a queer feminist journey through time and space and you who.
Good afternoon, Sophie.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, right.
What's all this thing?
What are you saying, as they say on Love Island?
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a new thing. They don't go, how you doing? They'll just be like, what are you saying?
Well, I suppose they are always talking because they've got literally nothing else
it's
to
insane.
Do.
I don't know. Like, I'm watching a couple seasons in parallel of Love Island, and one of them is at, like, week 7, and they have lost their grip on reality. Like, they've been in a villa, no family, no phones, no books, no media, nothing. Just each other and bizarre challenges and kind of Lord of the Flies style, you must pick the people you like the least. And they've gone totally batshit, unhinged.
Yeah.
Similar to, no, jokes, I'm fine.
Is that why you're watching so much of it? Because you see so much of yourself.
I need to dissociate and watch people doing totally meaningless stuff in a hot, sunny location. How are you?
I am fine. I have been plagued by headaches the last week, which has been annoying. As I keep saying to you, I did not ask for a head. Why do I need to deal with it? Also, frankly, the brain decides whether it's in pain or not. It's actively choosing to have a headache. Like, that is a decision my head is making. Why? Why?
I don't...
That's how it works. That's science.
I don't think that's science or medicine, but... Okay.
I have been watching a lot of Grey's Anatomy, and I will have you know that I am now a trauma surgeon, so whatever.
Oh my god, amazing. Okay, cool. So the next time there's a road traffic accident.
Yeah. Well, I already have the toxic trait of thinking I can do the thing where you put the biro through someone's throat.
Oh my god, me too. Oh my god, 100%. Tracheostomy.
Yeah.
Or if you're going into the
rib.
Yeah, tension pneumothorax.
Because I've seen that enough in film
casualty,
and TV.
And ER. Yeah. 100%.
That I feel like I can put a pin in someone's throat.
Give me
I
a bottle of vodka, a pen knife, and a biro inner.
And then yesterday in the episode I was watching, someone drilled a hole in a skull just with a normal drill to relieve some bleeding on the brain.
Whoa.
So I reckon.
That's like trepanning back in the day.
Mm.
Yeah, cool. Nah, definitely.
So
med school, med school.
Who needs to, yeah. When I was little, I wanted to be a doctor. I don't know why that was. Maybe we can unpack that when we get into our discussion question, actually.
Yeah.
Like, cool. How are you, other than watching Love Island?
Oh, yeah, okay. As discussed in our last recording, got some shit going on. That shit still persists. But so do I.
The horrors persist, but so do you.
Yeah.
Let that be the motto we all carry with us.
Sad girl, but okay.
We love that.
Well,
do we? I'm glad that you are persisting.
I'm glad that you're sad. Cool. The episode.
Yeah, thanks.
Episode 11 of season 4, Turn Left, asks what would happen if Donna never met the Doctor. How would Earth handle the Rachnos, the falling Titanic, or the Sontarans? Aided by a familiar blonde time traveller, Rose, Donna has to correct this alternate timeline from unfolding and... basically causing absolute carnage.
Yeah, chaos, hey.
Yeah.
Full chaos theory in effect. Yeah. Who could have thought that one person could have such a
dramatic impact? I know, which is also like,
impact.
Oh my god, the Doctor's exceptionalism again, but let's circle back to that.
Yeah, so Bechdel, yes.
Yes.
A lot of Donna and Rose.
Chiefly because it is a Doctor-light episode.
It is, yeah, he's not
so
in it.
The season is weird in that we had the Donna-light one,
yeah,
and then we've had a Doctor-light one, because obviously they had different stuff on.
Mm. It's cute when he isn't it, because they're just like on a tour of some random marketplace.
Yeah. A bit of a weirdly ethnic way.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Well, my discussion question is a bit of a weird one. I struggle to articulate it, but I think the thing that really stood out to me in this episode is this idea of fate and destiny, right? Like, how much of our lives are preordained? That made me think about the decisions that people make, and often women feel they have to make, because of the expectations that society places upon them. So there's this example in this episode where Donna's mum says to her, you only want to work at this office because you think you're going to meet a rich man and then you can get married and, you know, have the whole thing. And Donna goes, yeah, you're probably right. So the decision making in Donna's head in that point is, I need to find a man because I need to be in a relationship because, you know, for Donna, I think a lot of that is a self-worth issue. And then, you know, what does that mean? How do you extrapolate that onwards? So I think about paths that we envision for ourselves. you think you're going on a date. Great, you're dating. What is the next step in dating? You're going to get engaged. What is the next step? You're going to get married. What is the next step? You're going to buy a house. You're going to have children. You're going to have grandchildren. That is the expectation. That is the path that you're walking. And I think for women, more than men, this is a much bigger concern and takes up much more of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even from a young age, you are sort of conditioned to know that this is the path mm-hmm. that you're going to walk. Different in different societies, of course, but you know, I grew up in a very traditional South African environment. I don't think there was much deviation mm-hmm. in that. It's like you were going to date, you were going to get married, you were going to have kids. That was it. That is the path that you walk. There comes with that also sets expectations around careers, right? Like I have told you the story before where I was in kindy and we had to talk about our careers and I said I wanted to be a doctor. And when I walked across the stage, they said I wanted to be a doctor's wife because of the expectation of why would this little girl want to be a doctor? But also I think we've moved away from this a little bit in current society, but you know, back when my mum was younger, there was only a certain amount of jobs that women could do. Like yeah. traditionally, you were teachers, nurses, receptionists, like typists. Like yeah. there was much narrower focus on the careers that were open to women
yeah.
compared to now where we have more flexibility. And you still face barriers, don't get me wrong. Absolutely, if you're going into STEM or even like physical labor jobs like plumbing.
Yeah.
Electricians, builders, etc., are still very male-dominated spaces. But as we've discussed previously on this podcast, how much of that is... There's no accommodation made for women in that place. It's not viewed as a viable option. And you're just told that that's not for you. Yep. So, yeah, preordained paths.
Yeah, really interesting. I think you make a great point there with this especially older school attitude of what jobs are for men versus women. That, again, subscribing to that gender binary, but... I think part of it is that those are certain jobs that you can't do if you don't have that wife at home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my mom trained as a chef. She was before me and my brother were born in her 20s. She was a head chef. But she gave that up when we were born because like to work as a chef, you need what she said as the wife at home.
Yeah.
And my birth dad wasn't willing to be that parent at home, so mum couldn't do it, like
yeah.
And that was, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like. And that's the thing with like doctors and everything that work very erratic schedules or have a higher intense workload can't, like a receptionist, stop within school hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a family and you want a job, typically it's the woman that has to incorporate childcare around that job too.
Yeah, so you need a flexible job that allows for that, right? And that we've discussed that as well, like the expectation that women will pick up the kids from the school and we'll go to the school yeah. athletics day and make the costumes for this and pack the lunches and do all these extra things yeah. that maybe...
And their job is less important, so they can take sick leave when the yeah. kids are sick.
And then, yeah. you know, women's earning potential suffers as a result. They have worse outcomes in retirement,
yep.
lower KiwiSaver, lower superannuation, all these things that is a repercussion of taking a back seat in order to do that family caring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. And I think... It's cool to bring this up in the context of Doctor Who too, because we briefly talked about this in our pre-pod chat, but the idea in Who of set timelines and like you can't mess with the timeline, and that's really fatalistic
yeah.
to be like this is the way things have to be and that there's a little bit of leeway, but generally things are going to turn out the way they're meant to turn out, which is like we're just like watching fact, like there's yeah. no actual like control or will.
It's a very interesting approach to a time travel show, I think. Like I was thinking about this in this episode in particular, where I'm like, so we're just assuming that this is destiny, like this is fate, like this is always going to be that way. Like we talk about Donna being a you know, a focal point and all these things are aligned and lined up for her to be where she needs to be.
Yeah,
you know, the doctor says there's all these coincidences around you. It just asks a lot of questions around like, is free will even a thing? Like that is where the next step is. Like, does Donna have any free will in this world because of all these things that impact on her? Does Rose have any free will in the things that happen to her? What is free will? The Doctor is a Time Lord. Was it preordained that he was going to be at all these events and causing all these things? Like he talks about not interfering, but this is the time travel paradox, right? Like, was he always there interfering?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is it. Like, yeah, because he very actively has an active role in saving people and stopping events, and as we see in this episode, when he's taken out of the mix, a lot of people die like because he's not there to save them. And yeah, is it like, was he also following this path and things are always just the way they are? And yeah, I don't know. And it is very time traveler paradoxy, like maybe there's lots of alternate paths.
Yeah, I love maybe an alternate just timeline.
Shit tons of branching. And there's all these points of doctor intervention that causes a certain less death pass.
Like in Loki, right? How you, there's continual branches and there's this agency.
Branches of the timeline.
Go and prune it to stop it from getting out of control. But in Doctor Who, perhaps there is just... But then, if there's parallel universes, we know there's a parallel Earth, right? That's where Rose exists.
Yeah, there's many parallel universes.
So there's all these parallel universes, so... I don't know. It just it asks more questions than it answers.
It really does. And I think that's the Gare of Geoffrey card, right? Especially for like this level of sci-fi show, which is like pretty interesting, but not like super intellectual.
Entry
like,
level.
Entry level. Like it doesn't have to be super science-based. It doesn't expect to answer these things. And then because it's also the monster of the week to some extent format, like we move on.
Yeah.
We're not like this big crushing existential question. It's like next week, a different monster.
I do wish that more people interrogated why they make the decisions they make. Like, you know, Donna is challenged here by her mum being like, the only reason you want this job is this. And she's like, no, yeah, you're probably right. That pause with, I mean, Donna's mum is objectively awful.
Horrible
to her.
Mean, spiteful.
Yeah, it's a horrible way to try and manipulate Donna by doing that to her. But there's still a moment where Donna goes, actually, maybe that isn't the way my life should go. Maybe I need to reprioritize my focus. And I know that for some people, being in a relationship is an important path that they want to be on.
Yep.
But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to get married. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to have children. And I think too many people that I have, you know, anecdotally known in my life, I feel like they go down this path because they get swept away by the story of it, by the trajectory of it, the momentum of it, the societal expectation of this is just how the story goes. This is what you do. And I think it leads to unhappiness.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's really interesting. It's something I've interrogated a lot more over the last couple of years since I have been non-monogamous, because a cool part of that kind of discussion amongst people who are kind of doing the same in similar ways of relationships and dating is the idea of getting what they say off the relationship escalator. To be like, you meet one person, you become exclusive with that person, you meet each other's families, you move in, you get married legally, you have children, you stay together forever or until you divorce, then you meet someone new and repeat. And this idea of like, actually there's many different ways to be in relationships, and you could never move in with someone.
Yeah.
You could move in with someone and realize that actually that's not working but not want to break up, so de-escalate and take a step back and go a different way, or and then meet someone else and maybe move in with them instead, but are still with that first person you met. That it's not this one ladder that you like. In like, there's a great metaphor there with careers too, like trying to break both done this, of breaking this idea that that career is a ladder, and if you do any side steps or backward steps, you're
failing
and you're not making a logical upward move.
And the idea that just because you don't view the ladder in that way, there is you know, you lack ambition or you lack a certain capacity for, I don't know, love or empathy or emotion. And I would also argue, when you get into this trajectory of like preordained paths and thinking about things being the way they are and that's the way it is, you devalue other parts of your life that are just as important. We've spoken about that about friendships.
Yeah.
Because we upweight romantic relationships and we put so much time and effort into that because there is this societal expectation attached to it, I would suggest.
Yeah.
We devalue our friendship, which can offer you just as much fulfillment and richness as a romantic relationship can, but no one wants to have that conversation.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And I think that it does people a disservice in lots of ways. The relationship kind of traditional, that escalator discussion. Like, if somebody is seen to be single, it's like they are pitied. Like, oh, so you haven't found anyone yet. Or like, oh, you haven't had any children yet. Or like, oh, you live together but you're not married. That's lesser.
Yeah. There's always another bar to clear. And I find it fascinating because it does not enter my frame of reference at all. I don't think about it at all because I am aromantic, and therefore I don't miss it. I don't look for it. But then people will say to me, oh, are you dating? And it honestly catches me off guard because it doesn't my everyday life. And then I have to be like, what? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And then it's a lot of questions being like, oh, why not? And, you know, are you going to get back out there? Are you going to do... And it's such a... It's just not a part of my day-to-day life that it really... it's like a record scratch.
Yeah. Like, you're like, what? Oh yeah, that thing.
And I think people really struggle. Like, I think they think I'm putting it on, that it doesn't bother me. Like, I think some people think, oh, poor Jane, she just says that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because to them, it's such a foreign concept.
And yeah.
I acknowledge that there are people who are really into dating and really into relationships, aka you. So I know that is a thing, right? But I do wish more people would interrogate the hows and the whys. And we talked about this at work recently about how some people are just constantly in relationships.
Yeah.
And how I find that really problematic, because I'm like, you just need to sit by yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't think enough people do that.
No. Yeah, it is a good point to, like, to really know yourself. But also, it's totally cool if you just love being super close to people.
Yeah, just love being in love. That's legit too.
Hell yeah. Fucking love it, man. Straight into my veins.
Gross. Well, okay. Lots of reckons on that.
Yeah, super interesting. And, like, you make a good point about interrogation, like taking a second to actually try and gain some perspective, which can be hard when you're up against the cold face of society that looks one way, right?
Mm.
But I think this episode's really cool in that it gives Donna some space to do that.
Yeah.
In an admittedly super fucking traumatic way. When this episode was cracking on, I was like, oh god, is this going to end with that it's all been a blink of the eye and she like dreamt it? And kind of it did. And there was obviously no time had passed really, and the doctor just turned up and she was like, but it had been like years for her. It's like that time she got sucked into the thing in the library and then had a years long relationship, and she is really messed up by stuff that doesn't get really dwelt on. Like,
yeah, it's not really considered, hey?
No.
Yeah, okay, well, let's just crack on with some random obs then, I think. I think this, you know, I love a sliding doors moment, I have to say. Mm. I love the what if. Like, I love storylines that explore what would have happened if something else had happened. So it's cool to see that play out. But poor Donna, man. I just really feel for her. I think her mum is horrible on so many levels.
Yeah.
And, like, that moment when they're refugees and they're out in the wherever, the WOPs, and she's trying to talk to her mum and she says, you know, I guess I've always been a disappointment. And her mum's like, yeah. My mum, who has been basically catatonic for Lord knows how long, and the one thing she responds to is to say that, yeah, you are a disappointment to me.
I know, it's horrid. It's horrid. And I think up to that point, we were seeing it as, like, Donna's mum in the before times, and I wrote down, like, she's just so mean and spiteful and, like, actively misogynistic in a way that she probably couldn't even recognise. It's just internalised. And then we see them go through this horrible apocalypse. She comes out the other side, like you say, an absolute husk of a human being. And then I was thinking, oh, maybe this is going to be her come to Jesus' moment and there'd be a reckoning. No, it's like, fuck that, she's still who is she is.
And I wonder what happened to Donna's mum. Did Donna's father walk out on her? Was there some sort of issue? Because I feel like there's a lot of...
But like he got sick or died or something? Oh, I don't know.
I missed that. I don't know. Yeah. There's just, it seems like there's a lot of, like you said, misogynistic, internal misogyny there. And she doesn't value the things that Donna values. She finds her frivolous and ridiculous. And yeah. It's just kind of horrible. It's just horrible to see. And then, you know, Wilf is such a lovely old man and he just has to sit there and deal with this.
With his daughter just being horrid. Yeah. I know, it's very fucked up.
And the way he says to Donna, you know, you're not going to make the world any better by shouting at it. Like, he is just... He's really trying. It's like a bit of wartime spirit. And that made me really sad that this man who lived through the war then has to deal with all this horrible thing, and he has to keep his spirits up for everyone. And Donna calling someone Mussolini is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, for most of this episode, I was really vibing Donna in a way that I'm not normally. Yeah. Apart from a couple moments where I'm like, oh god, why do they make her say that shit?
Yeah.
It just comes across as, she is smart, but it comes across as like dramatic and ill-informed.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe she has had a more, like, academically sheltered upbringing by nature of who has raised her. But, like, she's not dumb, so, like, don't make her say this, like, inflammatory dumb shit.
Yeah, I think she is... They make her very oblivious to things.
Yeah.
In a way that I think is part of her character. Like, oh, Donna, always missing things. But it makes her seem actively dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when she doesn't get that they're being taken away to work camps. And she's like, she just stands there being like, oh, and it's Wilf's having a fucking breakdown.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, where are you taking them? Where are you taking them? I'm like, anyone with even a second's worth of history knowledge would have been like, not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
Labor camps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And this is the other thing that I found really interesting, because even when Donna makes a different choice, like here she has chosen to turn right instead of turning left, she still gets pulled back into the chaos. Like, Rose still finds her. Rose is still like, yo, we need to sort this out. There's something on your back, blah, blah, blah. So this is what I mean. Like, does free will even exist? I don't think so.
I know. Oh god, the bug on the back.
Yeah, which
it looks was like fucking a creepy, dude.
Dung beetle.
It did look like a dung beetle, yeah. Beetle on the back.
Yeah.
It looks like a giant beetle backpack.
It does. I wonder if we can buy one of those. Also, Rose just casually telling Donna that she's gonna die.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so let's sidebar Rose's presence in this.
Mm.
So obviously I'm sure it was very popular with fans. Sorry, this is me watching these episodes for the first time. I never saw them the first time around. I'm sure this was popular with fans of Rose at the time that they brought her back. Interesting from Billie Piper that she was, because it's before she got like properly famous doing other stuff, so I think she was cool to go back maybe and like do a few more eps. And maybe because they knew it was going to be David Tennant's last season, so they could like bring her back with Ten. But it kind of feels like Rose, and maybe Rose as a companion, is put on this pedestal, and then bringing her back in kind of overshadows Donna.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I find it annoying. I find it even more annoying in the finale, so I will be interested to see your opinion of it there, because it actively drives me mental.
Yeah, it's like she's like this, I don't know. Even coming in these episodes, like, she won't say her name.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, she's trying not to like give people too much information, but it comes across as like being superior and thinking like, don't worry, your pretty little head, I've got it under control, you just need to do this and sacrifice yourself.
I feel like when we've seen other companions come back, Martha, Sarah Jane, whatever, I feel like there's been character growth. And what I think with Rose actually is, like, I don't feel like she's grown at all in the time since we saw her last. To me, she's still the same person.
Yeah.
She's still behaving in the same way. And I find that problematic. I find it problematic that she seems to have put her life on hold in order to get back to the Doctor. She's got nothing else going for her in that universe, right? Like, she just wants to... That is not good. Like, you would have hoped that someone could have just... moved. And I know we're supposed to believe this is a big love story, but my problem has always been that I don't buy into the big love story.
Yeah, I don't. And like, based on what? Like, based on they had a strong connection, but I never saw it as like romantic necessarily. I don't know, it's weird. And this whole thing that he comes into these companions' lives, and we saw this happen with Martha and now with Rose, that they completely drink the Kool-Aid and on their own right and fully separated from the Doctor, go on world-saving missions. And it's hard to see that. Like, when they're with him, yeah, they get exposed to all these cool experiences and different things happening and different people in different locations. But to completely make them sacrifice everything about a normal life, even when they're not with the Doctor anymore, I'm like, is he really doing that much? Like, yeah, I don't know. It robs them of agency, I think, to just make them, like, all on his bandwagon.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well when you frame it as, like, Donna, you know, a lot of her pre-doctor activity was around getting a man, doing all that stuff, wanting to find someone, settle down. We meet her when she's getting married.
Yeah.
Now she's traveling with the Doctor. All of that's gone.
Yeah.
Like, she's no longer thinking about that. She wants to travel with him forever. Like, there's no family that factors into that decision.
Yeah.
So, again, I have to ask, how much of her decision-making is based on just expectation that she's trying to fulfill, meaning that she's trying to get from somewhere? Like, she's not doing the work to find out who she is as a person or to build herself up. She's looking for meaning in other people. And Donna is so convinced that she's not important. She just, like, even in this episode when she's being told how important she is, she doesn't believe it.
No. She's just like, because she's raised by that mother who makes her feel inferior and will give her shit about still living at home and, like, being a temp and all this stuff. So no wonder Donna is like, well, I need to find a man because
I need to get out of here.
That's a ticket out of the house. Yeah, because she doesn't earn enough to buy her own house alone. So it's like, for women, for a lot of, especially recent history, that's your way to, not even independent, because that's a stretcher a lot of times for women, but secure life is because your family can't support you forever. So you need to come under someone else's family by marrying a man, and then he'll look after you. Yeah, I know. Fucking gross.
Well, Donna says in this episode, I'm so tired. And yeah, that's a mood. It's a mood, Donna.
Yeah.
Chantho. Yeah. See?
Yeah, it's definitely Chantho.
Yeah, I looked it up. But the fortune teller is the same as Chantho from Utopia, our blue alien friend.
CGI definitely a mixed bag.
Mm.
The background scenes are getting better. Like, when we come over the vaguely ethnic beginning market, the background scenes look better, but then there's points later on where it's like, oh, that's a bit janky.
Yeah, I mean, really phoning it in with the, we're on a different planet, vaguely ethnic, marketplace. Like, okay, guys.
And then that bug is like fully just an animatronic bug that waggles a foot.
That's why you can't ever really see it.
No, it's just like the back is glued. It's on a little harness.
I love when they do things from the bug's perspective. Yeah, like when it runs like her. Like there's a lot of shots like that in Merlin, and I'm always like, oh gosh, here we go. Something is possessing
Merlin. Yeah,
something is possessing someone. We're seeing it from the ghost's point of view. Because
they're like, oh, there's a filter on, a heavy filter, and a fisheye lens, and you're like, this is from a bug's perspective.
So funny. It's like really peak BBC of the era. I feel they pioneered this shit. They were like, we have unlocked a new filming technique.
Perspective from a critter.
Maybe when we finish Doctor Who, we can watch Merlin.
Yeah, maybe. We can go back and to hot teenager.
And 20...
Weird sentence. 2035. Like, he will be hot in the future when he's an adult.
Problematic.
But I was a teen when he was a teen, that makes it okay.
Yeah. I have this conversation with my housemate all the time when we watch teen shows, when like we're watching Teen Wolf, and I'm like, I think it's okay because they're our age.
So. Yeah, so then he was, you know, like now we're in the 30s. Oh God. The bees are disappearing. About the bees again.
Yeah. I'm
picking up on these bee clues. All three of the family, the noble family, crammed into a hotel room. No one asked for that. How is that a luxury break? Yeah. I'd rather be at home.
Well, good thing they left, weird. Though.
I mean, yeah, and obviously, like, Rose got them to leave. I mean, that's changing the fucking timeline, but only because Donna has to survive. But it's like, is that changing the timeline, or is that the timeline that is preordained?
Yeah, she had to... who knows? Also, why does the Titanic make a mushroom cloud? Was it nuclear?
I know, was it nuclear? Yeah, because then they're talking about all the radiation.
Yeah, and I was like...
Was it nuclear powered?
I don't think... I couldn't remember that from the episode. Maybe
it was some future science. It's the nuclear fusion-y blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe. They just make up shit. Like, it's propulsion.
I was
like,
trying to remember. When they
were in it. Yeah, when they were in it and then, like, the...
Because I thought...
The well-meaning couple that won the thing fell down the shaft.
Yeah. I thought all of that was just because the Titanic was going to crash into London, which will have its own ramifications. Yeah. I didn't anticipate that it was because it's going to cause... nuclear fallout all over.
So you can get a mushroom cloud from explosions, I think. It doesn't necessarily have to be nuclear fallout, but they did talk about radiation later on in the episode, like it was nuclear. But a projectile that big hitting at that speed would cause a big fucking issue.
I did like the shockwave.
They got the sound wave. Yeah, that was cool. Jinx.
But yeah, fuck, that was grim. That was just, all of that was grim. Like, they're all refugees. They're, like, it's traveling horrible. Around.
I wrote bleak post-apocalyptic England. No one wants that.
Being sent to Leeds.
Yeah, Jesus, billeted in fucking Leeds with a billion people. I would literally, like, rather be in the woods. It was awful.
Stay in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
God, horrible. So horrible.
Rose gives a little shout out to Yanto and Gwen, who gave their lives to bring down whatever it was, the Rachnos or something.
Was it the Rachnos that time? Or was it the Sontarans?
Might have been the Sontarans.
Who knows? It was like a nice walking tour back through season 4 and previous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
the
weird.
The Oedipos taking over America.
Oh yeah, the fat babies! I wrote them down. Fat babies ravaged America.
Because I suppose Oedipos was like, we can't do England anymore because they've been destroyed by... the Titanic, so we'll do...
Everyone's getting wartime thin, so we'll go to the Americans. But also, Americans are not helping us because they got ravaged by the fat baby takers.
Everyone has their problems.
So weird. Okay, random question. They talk about, oh, okay, all this bad stuff is happening because the doctor wasn't there to intervene, which happened in the true timeline, right? Mm. And so all this shit goes down, aliens ravage stuff, blah, blah, blah. But is the issue the doctor, or is the issue the TARDIS? Because, like, the doctor did a lot of stuff, but someone else could have done it if they just had the TARDIS. But the TARDIS is what lets you get everywhere.
Right, so you're saying...
So maybe the true hero is...
the TARDIS.
The TARDIS.
Do you think if Rose had control of the TARDIS, she could just be going...
I mean, yeah, because she knows what has to happen. And she just have to follow what she knew would happen, right? But then they have a TARDIS, but they can't make it work because it's dying.
But then the Doctor problem solves a lot of these things. It's not just turning up and hitting a button.
I mean, yeah, true.
He does do a lot of...
He's like, he's just right man in the right place.
Yeah,
like,
anyone can do it.
Right place at the right time. Lol. Okay, I'm sorry, Doctor. But I do think the TARDIS is...
Yeah, it's as you said, it is the Doctor's exceptionalism, right? Like, we're saying that the Earth would not exist if it wasn't for the Doctor. That's what we're saying in this episode. Like, without the Doctor... nothing goes right. And without Donna, the Doctor doesn't exist. So...
yeah. Which is weird. Like, have I missed a lot of foreshadowing? I don't know. It feels like they've just come out of left field. Donna is crucial.
Well, I mean,
is she?
It does come up in that Christmas special with the Rachnos, right? Where she's like, you need to sort out your shit because you were just going to let... that kill you, and that's why I don't want to travel with you, because you're too angry. And so he does do a lot of self-reflection, and Martha does a lot of rehab on him.
That's true. Fucking hell. But they also women are not your therapy.
Yeah, I mean, that is the whole theme of Tennant's Doctor Who, I would argue. We must keep watch to see if it continues into the newest seasons.
Women as therapy, yeah.
But I feel like very much for this, even Christopher Eccleston, very much the emotional burden is on the companions to fix him. To make him functional.
Yeah. To enable him to be functioning enough to do all the jazzy shit that he has to do.
Yeah, and as we've discussed previously, he just farms out his empathy to these human companions, and Donna has to do a lot of that, which I think she does wrongly in this season, but she does do it.
But then it's like a bit fucked that the companions have such an integral role, but they're the ones that are interchangeable,
and they're the ones who get left behind and get fucked over the most. Like, he's not giving them therapy.
No, not at all. And they come from, they don't, you know, they haven't spent a lifetime as a Time Lord knowing what's going on.
They're
plucked out of obscurity.
They're like undercover cops that go back to their normal lives and don't know how to function.
Yeah, it's like coming out of prison.
Yeah.
The TARDIS is the prison in this analogy.
Like, they don't have lives, they don't have future prospects, their ideas of what life is have been completely changed. They'll never find satisfaction. Like, we saw that in season two, right? When Rose thinks she's trapped on Earth and she's so miserable because nothing could ever live up to traveling with the Doctor.
Or old Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
When she's like, I waited. I didn't find anyone else. God. Oh.
Pretty grim.
I think I wrote down, this is a sad episode.
Yeah.
Like, lots of trauma for Donna, but just generally fucking sad.
It's a lot of really grim stuff. And, like, stuff that touches too close to home. Like, all that England for the English shit.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
We are one disaster away from this being a reality.
Yeah, like, actually. 100%. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a really interesting episode that they... Because, obviously, like, when you write a TV show, maybe they have more ideas than they ever make, right? But this made the cut. And I'm like, oh, it's just a bit of a... Because there's... After this, it's the season finale. The season double.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is the penultimate one. God.
Which I would argue that, not to spoil it for you, but it's sad.
Yeah.
The finale is sad.
Okay, God.
In the same sort of way. Also, I need to flag that. I don't know if you wanted to watch Torchwood Season 2, but you need to do that before you watch the finale, because otherwise it's quite a significant spoiler for Torchwood Season 2.
So Torchwood Season 2 came out between, or alongside 4?
Before this final episode.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think fate's going to be a theme that will... It's a thread, right? It's a thread of time travel to some degree. But it is also particularly this thread of Doctor Who.
But it's very interesting to me for a show that's so agnostic to also be so obsessed with destiny and fate. And, like, yeah, sure, you don't need religion to believe in a fated reality, but...
I think you kind of... to some degree, you do. Not necessarily religion, but, like, a higher power. Something that is controlling
intelligent
things.
Design.
Yeah, something that's controlling things beyond us just bumbling around as mammals, which is hard to kind of conceive of without getting into that religious space of, like,
but
it's a creator, or it's manifested, or...
What's the alternative, though? Just to believe that everything is a collection of random chance and coincidence?
Yeah.
Is that what life is? Just random shit happening to us?
I mean, yeah.
I don't like that. And I feel like a lot of people don't like that. That's why you look for meaning in tarot cards.
But it's like, yeah, you can have your ideas and you can make your choices, but that's cool. There's no bigger plan. You're just like we see ants in an anthill just going about their lives. And where
maybe
are the
they
ants?
Have a bigger plan. There's a bigger plan for them too. No! I'll free fall into despair. I need to believe that there's meaning. My life. Okay, now welcome to how I spiral in real time. You can all listen to me have a breakdown, existential breakdown. I have these regularly. You know, I've got a friend who's never had an existential breakdown. Like, she doesn't think about it at all.
Okay.
Like how my housemate thinks it's unhinged when I come home, and I'm like, do you ever just think, man, it's such a nice day, I believe I'll be dead one day? And she's like, no, I literally never think that. What? Can't relate. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that is weird. Well, did you have any standouts?
My standout is Wilf. I think he is a lovely man. I think he really brings a lot of heart, not only to the episode, but to Donna. I think without him, I would find Donna very hard to like and engage with, but he sort of gives her, I don't know, a cushion that makes me believe her being the way that she is.
That's a good point. He softens her for sure.
Yeah.
And then I remember you said you liked Wilf in other episodes too.
I just think he's a sweet man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just a shout out to my lovely tortured peeps getting a shout out as well, even though they did die in this, but that's fine.
Yeah, in this version of reality. So it was really cool to have Donna given the opportunity a lot more subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, a lot of it was like legit anguish, but I think that was great. It's like some depth.
Yeah.
She felt more well-rounded.
She did, yeah.
And not just like...
weepy or angry.
Yeah, weepy or angry. Exactly. That's it. Not just coming in and just being like, rah, rah, like making a snarky joke and like denying she ever wants to be in a relationship, you know, like, you know, all that stuff. Like, but actually having like some nuance, some ability to feel feelings and act in a serious way. It's like an extra layer of seriousness that I think was like cool and made me not hate Donna as much.
Because
I do get annoyed when she's just doing like wacky Donna stuff. And when she does the stupid voice, when she like does that rah rah voice, I don't know, that sounds like I'm attacking her as a person. But
I find her cool. hard to like. I do find Donna really hard to like as a companion, which is again interesting to me because she is a favored companion. People really love Donna.
Who is people?
I mean,
the fandom. Yeah.
And I've always been a Martha stan. I've always thought out of all of the early Who companions, Martha is objectively the best companion, in my opinion. And that is very unpopular.
Is that racism, do you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
No, I think it's Rose exceptionalism.
Yeah. I rate Martha.
I think people are too attached to Rose.
This is fascinating.
So they really struggled to get on board with Martha, and then when Martha left, it was easy to get on board with Donna because you had that break in between, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Martha was just much maligned, unfairly, because she is very capable. Anyway, and the doctor is actively mean to her, as we have discussed.
Well.
Yeah, okay, so that's us for this one. Next time, we'll be watching the final two episodes of season 4, the end of the David Tennant. Well, not really. Not yet. Anyway, the final two episodes of season 4. The Stolen Earth / Journey's End. Let us know your thoughts by emailing atardisofonesown@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram. And yeah, there'll be some links maybe in the show notes. Probably not. It's just vibes this episode. But there's a link to our other podcast that's on my watch list. So if you want to hear more from us, you can go listen to our episode on Succession and Fleabag.
Yeah.
And soon we will record one on John Wick because we finished watching those.
We will record one on John Wick. Yeah, awesome.
Cool. All right. Okay. Well, that's us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.